From cradle to grave, every moment of your life is one word after another, overlapping all the words from all of those who've crossed your path in a never-ending cycle of tale and experience. The concept is simple. The guest chooses the theme, the coin is flipped, and the winner is the first to tell a story based on their chosen theme. The loser gets to share a second. There are no prizes, no contests, no rules, and no boundaries. Just a few minutes spent exchanging the narrative from moments of our own human existence. Welcome to Tell Me a Story. Well, hi!
Well, there you are. That sounded funky while you did that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So what's up?
Not like something out of a horror movie.
There was an odd noise. I will try and isolate it later and see if I can pull it out. But, no, we can do a little quickie show.
Yeah.
Because I feel awful. I feel worse than I felt on Sunday.
I am sorry to hear that.
I am not enjoying this. It's just some weird thing with my neck is shooting up into my head. The holy cross section from where neck hit shoulders to spine has gone insane the last few days. And I have run out of pharmaceuticals with which to make myself not care.
They don't actually do anything about the pain. They just make you not care about it.
They really don't. They make me feel very, very, very silly.
You need to do something about that. A little Tai Chi, a little yoga, something for you.
I just need to get unfat.
And I'm with you, brother. About to bust another button out of a coat.
Good times.
Yeah.
But you know what the best part about being fat is? It's delicious.
It's delicious. I know. I was talking to my stage manager, asking her what her tastes were. We were going to order some dinner. And she said, I really don't think about that. She said, I only eat socially, really. I said, how would that be?
How? What?
Yeah.
What is she? Where does she get her calories?
She's a skinny little thing. So, yeah, I don't know. I think she's slowly eating her own flesh away.
Huh.
But yeah, she eats socially, so she goes out to dinner or eats with her roommates or something. But aside from that, she doesn't think about eating. She doesn't think about food. And I'm like, I have absolutely no context for that whatsoever.
I am always thinking about food.
I'm constantly. And I'm such a foodie. You know, it's like, it's got to be something really good. I can't just get some cheap shit and I can tell the difference. People say, oh, I can't tell the difference between this or this. I always can.
Huh.
We've always had the long running joke in our house of ketchup. Because it's got to be Heinz.
Okay.
All this ketchup tastes like shit to me. And they
yes, it must be Heinz. It must be owned by the John Kerry family.
That's right. It's democratic ketchup.
Well, I did. I found out right before I left the office tonight that we were going to have some leftover, I'm going to say Mexican-inspired food.
Mm-hmm.
It was tasty last night, but, you know, I don't do Mexican 2 days in a row because I'm Scottish. And so I came in and I toasted up a bagel and threw on a little butter and cream cheese, ham, gouda, lettuce, and just started to eat. And Brenda like had a bite and said it was the best sandwich she's ever had. And that's just it. I love to cook. I had a quick bite on my way into work this morning, and then I haven't eaten all day. And there's a Walmart behind my office, and they have rotisserie chickens. And at 12:30, they go from $8 to $4. And I could put away an entire rotisserie chicken, you know, over the course of an hour, like a snack.
Yeah. Pick at it for a few out for an hour. That's so bad.
Yeah, I can hear the little fucker singing to me. You know, come eat me. I'm like, no, working. And so I knew I had bought ham last night, and Gouda, and was like, oh, you know, a ham sandwich really hit the spot. So I've been dreaming of one all day. I walked in the door, kind of vaguely said hi, threw a snack bag I'd grabbed at the gas station at the family. Here, have some potato chips. And you guys can have your fucking quesadillas. And I made the sandwich and was just like, oh. And I was mad at myself for not having eaten lunch. My tummy had shrunk a bit, and I couldn't. There wasn't room to go make another sandwich, which is what I desperately wanted.
Because you always want the second sandwich.
I love sandwiches. They're my favorite food.
Well, that's the thing for me. It's always dinner is when I go back for seconds. And maybe it's just because I'm home. I don't know what it is. Breakfast, it's I'm lucky to get an egg down me along with my coffee. Lunch, I always take whatever can fit into my little lunch bag that I clip onto my travel bag.
Yeah.
And dinner, though, it's I come home and bam, I'm hungry, and I will eat. And they tell you should eat like a king, lunch like a prince, and eat dinner like a, you should have breakfast like a king, lunch like a prince, and you should have dinner like a college student who just ran out of money.
Right.
And I am the opposite.
Yeah, so am I. I think that's why we're fat.
I think so. I think so, that would drive it perfectly. That
I got for my anniversary, I got a Doctor Who lunchbox.
Nice.
Yeah, I need to pull it out and fill it with sandwiches tomorrow.
Yes.
Because I have got to quit. You know, I hate Walmart. I hate them. I loathe them. They're terrible people with a bad business model, etc. But it's right there, and they have really good sandwiches for like $3, and big salads for like $3. And
that's really the best you can do there too, because they're going out and using at least reasonably fresh ingredients to put those sandwiches together and such. I mean, not like the shit they're putting out in the
gas stations,
out in the produce section and the like.
Yeah, actually, this particular one, I don't know what the hell the deal is. Their produce is fantastic.
It's the east side. It's the Upper East Side.
Yeah.
Well, this was a little bit high end for everybody.
This was one where it was a case of be careful what you wish for, because I don't know if you remember or not, but a couple of years ago, that Walmart used to be a Super Kmart, and Super Kmart closed it, and Walmart's like, hey, we are going to buy it and turn it into one of our fancy boutique neighborhood Walmarts. There's one down here, you know, about 20 blocks south of my house. It is a really neat little grocery store. I don't go there because it's Walmart, but I was forced to go there for their pharmacy a couple of times years back. The food is a little more expensive, but it's far, far better quality. And so all these Upper East Side snobs who didn't want a Walmart, and I get it, they sued to not get it, and then they found out they were going to get it. And had they just let Walmart put their little boutique shop in, they'd have a pretty thing on that property. You know, they'd have a much better grocery store that pays their people a little bit better. And instead, they got a Super Kmart back in. They're not allowed to have they passed ordinances. They don't get a deli. So another Walmart has to make all of their food and ship it there. So that's why the chickens end up on a discount, is because they got cooked hours before. They're coming up on their expiration. So at noon, if I can hang on till 12:30, I can get a whole chicken for $4, which, as you know, is one of my favorite things.
A whole chicken for $4.
Yeah.
Cheap chicken.
All right. So that's 8 minutes on food. I want to talk about crazy women. I saw that in your list.
Yep.
Because you know, we can talk about theater.
Just like when we picked my own show, I have to send you an entire list of things that I could possibly do.
Yeah, hey, I want you to do a show. What do you want to do? And you're like, here's 10 things. This one sounds weird. Let's do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's that about? Comic books? Done.
Okay. That was easy.
Yeah. Very, I want to continue easy. The conversation about comics, but we talk about that every Sunday, so something else interesting would be fun.
Well, what about, what'd you think about that Gotham trailer? I didn't know they were that far.
Awesome. I cannot wait to see it now.
We've
been joking this whole time about Gotham Creek. It looks really fucking cool.
Smallville Part 2.
Yeah.
And yet, this looks like they took all the lessons learned in the first 9 3/4 seasons of Smallville, you know, and adapted them to a more adult readable script.
Yeah.
And Donald Logue! How cool did he look?
He looked awesome as Bullock. And as long as they don't fuck with it like they did with Almost Human and Firefly, where they take him out of order and everything and fuck up the continuity, I think he'll find an audience a lot faster than Almost Human and Firefly, too.
Yeah. Do you think it's
Batman?
Creepy that Selina Kyle is so much older than Bruce Wayne?
I think they're the same age, but girls mature faster than boys. So
oh, you think they're just... Bigger. Okay. Because he looked awful young.
He does, but then I look at my own kid and compare
touché.
It to his girlfriend.
Very touche.
Yeah,
I think it is time to make him our mascot.
Yeah, I'm like, your growth spurt's coming, kid, because I was about that size when I was 14, so it'll hit and you won't know what the hell happened.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's see. College days. I remember the time you and I were sitting in the student lounge at the Utah Valley Communist Collective, and Bob Manning popped by and told us that I wanna cast you guys and Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead. We I believe at the time had not yet read it.
We had not yet read it, and we
thought he was thought he was being nice. Mm-hmm. Turns out he's being a douche.
Yeah. You know, I was a little suspicious of him because he kind of turned into a douche. And you hadn't been around to notice it, but
well, kind of. It was the whole leaving his wife and running off with a younger woman who was a student part. That was kind of douchey.
Yep.
Even at that point in my lack of consciousness, I realized what an absolute ass move that was.
Eventually, she left him, the second woman.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
She wasn't that dumb.
God, no shit.
Didn't he lose his hair? Or did he get fat?
I think it's still thinning. I think it's like a comb over now. Last time I saw him, and it was years ago at Ken Olsen's funeral, he didn't look that much different, just an older version of himself, and I don't remember him being terribly bald. I expected him to be a cue ball.
Yeah.
Looking like Ron Howard in a baseball cap or something, but he looked pretty normal.
And he does seem to be the kind of guy to wear a baseball cap to a funeral.
I was thinking about something this morning when I was thinking, hey, I might be doing this thing with Jeff today. The first time I remember hearing your name.
Uh-oh.
I'd gone over to our mutual buddy Jason Anderson's house to pick him up for something we were going to go do because we were always hanging out together.
This is before or after I broke his car?
This was just after. His mother was lecturing him on the fact that he was too trusting of people. Which sounds like an odd thing for a parent to lecture someone on. But then she brought up, and you loaned Jeff Bell your car and look what happened to it. And then she said, fine, just leave. And so he and I left. I said, what's this whole thing with the car? And he said, oh, I loaned my car to Jeff Bell, and he took it up skiing with his girlfriend Tammy, and it went in the ditch. I said,
that is not what happened.
I said, who's this Jeff Bell? He says, well, he's a sophomore in high school. I thought two things. I thought that kid has got a massive set of balls, one for asking a senior, because that's what Jake was at the time, if he could borrow his car to take his girlfriend up skiing, and two, that you actually took that crappy Datsun B210 up into the hills like that, when I know those tires were balder than we expected Bob Manning to be.
All right, I'm going to tell this story.
Yeah.
So, Tammy was the girl.
Yeah.
And at that particular time, there were two dudes that never really hung out with us, but were always kind of around the periphery. Mm-hmm. It was Bastion and Cowley. And she was a junior, and they were both just stupid for her.
Yeah.
And she was very pretty and very, very smart. And, but these two friends of mine had both, I mean, you know, is... Dear ladies, I apologize for how terrible this is about to sound. They had both called dibs and had decided to fight it out amongst themselves. I didn't care. I'm like, you don't do that. Once your buddies are interested in a girl, you don't go after the girl until they've screwed it up. So
once they called dibs, I would imagine they've already screwed it up.
Oh, yeah, they totally did. And so they were doing a full court press woo on this poor woman, young woman. And...
Bishop's daughter.
State president's daughter.
Yeah. Yeah.
And for those that don't speak Mormon, it's like a junior cardinal. And so anyway, something happened and we all ended up over at her house to play pool. And I was, you know, I was aloof and distant and not on purpose because I didn't know that was a thing that a dude could do at that time yet that worked, to ignore a girl to get a girl. Because had I been interested, I would have been just as spastic as those two. And something about that and probably I was a foot taller than both of them, triggered. And by the end of the afternoon, she kissed me right in front of both of them, which, as you can guess, caused tensions.
Now, I
was tooling around a little bit with the theater kids. I hadn't fully integrated with them yet. But I was introduced to Jake Anderson, and we were all down in sophomore hall, and Tammy was all, you know, we should skip school and go skiing. And I'm like, that's great. Do you have your parents' car? And she says, no. And I said, well, I don't have a car. All I have is my little blue motorcycle, and we can't take that skiing. It's freezing outside. And she's like, oh, what are we going to do now? I don't think Jake listens to this show.
No.
Now, okay, so I'm going to go ahead and tell this.
I think he occasionally listens to the comic book show. He would never listen to the political show.
That's too bad.
In his eyes. And so this falls under that because we put it out with Left Show. So
Okay. So Jake has a habit of getting crushes on girls. And
what?
So, yeah.
No.
And especially girls that are involved with other guys.
Yes.
I don't know if he still does that, but he certainly did in high school. And so he just was kind of in the area and no harm, no foul. Hey, Jake, can I borrow your car to take Tammy skiing? And Tammy's standing there in those high-waisted, weird lady airline pilot pants that girls were wearing back in the 80s.
Yeah, the 80s jeans.
And he kind of looked her up one side and down the other and said, yeah, sure. Just make sure you have it back by the time school's over. He threw me the keys. And I'm like, well, shit. Okay.
Let's go.
So I grabbed my little brother and his friend, and we all got in the car, and off we go to Salt Lake. We stop in and rent skis. And because I had several growth spurts through then and couldn't fit in anything I'd bought. And so in a moment of complete idiocy, I rented a snowboard, a Burton snowboard.
Mm.
And all I was wearing at the time, because usually I would put on ski boots, all I had on were my Converse All-Stars.
I remember hearing about that. Yeah.
Not a good boot, you know, for
not good.
Like, the fuck I knew. I'm just like, hey, I'll get a snowboard. I'm a tough guy. I'm impressing a girl. And so off we go. Now, I've got the snowboard. We're going up to Canyon. We can't go to Solitude, which is where I normally ski, because at that time, they were, as far as I'm concerned, they were keeping the scourge of the mountain off the mountain, off their mountain. So we had to go all the way to Brighton. So the car's running okay up there, and we get to the Solitude parking lot and go past it and on the way to Brighton. And the revs start going higher as the speed starts going lower. And I'm shifting around, and I'm like, man, there's something not right with this car. And finally, the revs are up, and I'm not moving forward at all. And I'm like, oh, well, it's kind of a pussy car. Perhaps, you know, it's just not strong enough. We were, honest to God, 20 yards from the top of the hill that you get to before you roll down into Brighton's parking lot.
Right.
So I throw on the brake. We put Tammy in the driver's seat. Sven, my little brother Trent, and I get behind the car. we're gonna push it the rest of the way, by God. Mm-hmm. And so we all get lined up and 3-2-1 countdown, and she puts it in neutral. We held that car still. Datsun B210, four-door, weighed all of 900 pounds. It was still a steep enough grade. We could not get it up. Mm-hmm. And you know, it, what had happened was, I mean, because there's no suspense to this part, the clutch had blown in that tiny car. So we, and I don't know what story Jake told his mom. So let's throw that out there, because I don't know where the hell that ditch thing came in. The only broken part of his car was that, and I took the Big Mac styrofoam out of his heater vent, which apparently had something to do with heating. But so we flipped the car around, and there was a tubing area down the canyon a bit from Solitude. And I had just spent basically $30 renting everybody's skis and stuff. And I'm like, hey, let's try out the snowboard. We'll go over there. We'll go up the hill. We'll do stuff. We'll fuck around for a couple hours, and then we'll head back to school. At the time, not knowing that I couldn't pull over and fix a clutch, I had no fucking idea. Yeah. I figured it'd all work out. Why not? I'm charmed. The hot girl likes me. So, you know, minutes pass. We pull over. We gear up. We hike to the top of the thing, and it had been really warm for a few days. And this particular day had a nice cold snap come in. And so the snow in the tubing area that was already pretty compacted had melted and then refrozen into basically shiny concrete. I, never having been on a snowboard before, climbed to the top of the hill with Tammy standing next to me, my little brother and his friend with their skis. And I'm like, well, what the hell? I start going down the hill, and instantly I know that this is just the dumbest thing I've ever done. I'm going way too fast. I can tell that I don't have any grip. I have a frictionless surface between the bottom of the snowboard and the snow. And all I think to myself is, okay, on a skateboard, you swing the tail around and then you stop. So I swung the tail around to stop, and it caught the front edge, and it cartwheeled me, head, board, like a stick. Like, suddenly I wasn't bendy at all. Knocked me unconscious, cracked my head, tore the skin off my face, all the way down my chest, all the way down to my belt. It was just this road rash. And I'm out. Boof. And I slide all the way down the bottom of the hill. I hear in the back of my blackout Tammy scream. She comes sliding down the hill, and her ski boots hit the top of my head, knocking me out again. Just for a second, I kind of pop back up. She's like, oh my God, are you okay? Are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. My eyes don't track. They were going their own little separate ways.
Yeah.
And I'm really dizzy. And she's like, don't move. My little brother had seen what had just happened to me, and in a moment of brotherly concern, had on his skis, whoosh, down once Tammy got to me. And then he tried to stop and slid into the top of my head, knocking me out for the third time that morning in less than a minute. This time it took, I guess, from what Tammy told me, it took about 10 minutes for me to come around, because he really hit me hard.
For those not from Utah, a tubing hill is packed ice, because you're sliding down, you've got kids and tubes and pieces of rubber sliding down that thing day in, day out. It creates a friction that then melts the snow and the ice underneath. And then that freezes, and you wind up with this really, really, really super slick surface, which is insane to see your snowboard on.
Yeah. Again, I was a sophomore.
Yeah.
And I was showing off for a girl. So I come to again, and I'm like, what happened? And my little brother says, you're alive? Question mark. I said, yeah, I think so. He's like, great. I got to try that fucking board. And so he tugs it off my feet. I'm laying there bleeding everywhere, and Tammy gets me to my feet, and I have like a montage recollection, you know, flash of getting the 300 or 400 yards from, you know, where I died apparently to the car. And we get to the car, and now suddenly the predicament we're in has lost the mastermind, who was, everything will be fine. And I'm the only one that can drive. Tammy has her driver's license, but she hates to drive, and she's not very good at it. And you know me, it's like, well, you know, fuck, it's got wheels, we'll make it. I don't care. We'll see what happens. And so she has to basically coast all the way from the top of the canyon to the bottom of this windy, windy, tight turned canyon.
Because you've got no power whatsoever.
No power. No gears to slow down with, to engine slow, nothing. And her boyfriend is basically going in and out of consciousness and bleeding all over the car. And we get to the bottom of the hill, and we manage to make it all the way to 20th East. And what is now, I think, a check cashing place was this kind of ratty, beat-up Texaco. And yeah. I had passed out or gone to sleep, whatever you want to call it. I'd taken a nap. And Tammy wakes me up and says, what do we do? And I look back at my little brother, and I'm like, call Dad. And he's like, we're skipping school. I'm like, yeah, call Dad. So, because Dad worked up in Salt Lake. So Dad comes over, picks us all up. We park the car. We talk to the mechanic. And there's something I'm not remembering, and I'll get to that in a minute. But so we're all in the car, and my dad is not a yeller. He is a lecture guy, and he will lecture until you are begging to be punched. That's his way of punishing. And so we're in the car, and he's letting Sven and Tammy and Trent know that Trent, his son, is grounded. Sven's parents will be told what has happened. Tammy, I'm going to have to tell your parents what happened. You know, this wasn't very well thought out. This wasn't a smart thing to do. You know, I'm sorry that this turned out badly for you, because you'll probably all be grounded, and on and on and on he goes. All the way from 20th and 215, we're on the Alpine Highway, you know, headed in to drop Sven off up in Cedar Hills. And at one point, and this caused friction between my brother and I for years to come, I'm riding shotgun. These three are in the back. And at some point, my little brother says, well, what about Jeff? My dad looks over at my crumpled, bleeding form. He's like, yeah, pretty sure he's been punished already. So la-di-da, I end up, like, we take me to the...
been going in and out of consciousness, because I'm really curious as to how Trent did on the snowboard.
Oh, he did great. Little shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did four or five runs in the time it took me to walk to the car.
That makes a lot of sense with Trent.
Yeah, and Sven did it too. They're short little guys, athletic as hell. So Dad takes all of the kids home before he takes me to the hospital, part of my punishment.
Yeah.
And I go to the hospital, severe concussion, don't sleep for 2 days. I don't know, and I have no recollection at what point I let Jake know I had fucked up his car, where his car was, and what had happened. I am pretty sure, and I have to ask him, if my dad may have been the one who called him, or Tammy, because I honestly don't know. And he never... ever got mad at me. He never busted my balls about it. He's like, well, yeah, it was a pretty shitty car. I've rolled it a couple times myself, he says.
Yep.
And that was just one of the things I always loved him for, is that there, most of humanity would have been livid pissed and never would have been my pal after I had blown the clutch in their car and gotten them in trouble with their parents. And he was just like, bah, shit happens. And I always, always liked that and appreciated that about him in particular. Now, what I don't know.
For the shitty cars, though, so blown clutches were pretty much par for the course.
Well, deep down inside, he could be pissed at me. I don't know. He's just never told me that he is.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the most he was probably pissed. I think he was more pissed at himself, and his mother lecturing him like that was kind of... She was almost just Jiminy Cricket, only in an evil, demented sort of way. And she would poke at his things that I knew bugged him. I knew... where he knew were his foibles, but he would never talk about them. He would never admit them.
Yeah.
But she would just poke at them and poke at them. Yeah.
That's no fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. That was a good day. All right, so what do you got? What have you ever done to Jason? Let's make that our theme. Mean things we've done to Jason. Have you ever dated a girl he's been interested in? I know he's been interested in girls you've been interested in.
Yeah, but I was dating him at the time.
I know.
I'm trying to think because he's always been a pal, like you say.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that I probably fucked it up for him. He had this girl who he obsessed over, and from the day that he met her, when he used to work in the computer lab at the high school, you remember that?
I do.
The day he met her, he fell in love with her, and she busted his balls and treated him like shit every single day. Let him know in no uncertain terms that she wanted nothing to do with him, which only fueled his fire. And he still bounced from girl to girl, especially girls that Ryan or I were interested in.
Sure.
And then finally, there was this one girl who I could tell that she had been a victim of rape, and I could tell that she was still kind of in a victim mode, and that I wasn't, apart from her being a pretty girl and me having a penis, I really wasn't that interested in her, you know, except as a person.
Sure.
Because I had a girlfriend and stuff at the time. And she had come over one night thinking he was going to be there, thinking Jake was going to show up because he was at my house every fucking night. And he wasn't there. I said, well, come on in. We'll sit and chat. And I don't know what she expected to happen, but I just sat and talked to her. And I told her, I said, you know that girl he's always obsessing about? She goes, yeah. I said, he has never been even on a date with her. He has never kissed her. He's never done anything. She's just, her eyes are getting bigger and bigger because the way he would blow up about this girl, he made everybody think she had been the once great love of his life and that she had walked away and that was the dumbest thing she'd ever done. And it was entirely in his mind the whole time. And it used to drive me nuts. So I went out of my way to make sure that those who were living in the Jake pity party understood exactly where this was coming from. So that's probably the shittiest thing I ever did to that poor guy.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, it's... Okay. In case Jake does listen to this, dude, you know that we are speaking from a place of love.
Oh, yeah.
You know, He constantly wears his heart on his sleeve, and because of that, it has scarred him. And he did have, inappropriate crushes on his buddy's girlfriend, I think because he had a Rick Springfield soundtrack going in his head. Jesse's Girl.
Yeah, the Jesse's Girl thing. I don't know. I was just reflecting on the fact that I really wasn't that much different from him.
No?
In ways. I could be a whiny little shit a lot of the time. Always saw the grass as greener when some dude brought a girlfriend over. Mostly because I was usually single when all my other friends had girlfriends.
Which is never fair.
Yeah, it is never fair. Because then you're staring at that girl, you know, while Jeff's kissing her neck and getting her all tingly. And you're thinking...
Now you're thinking about Cammy.
No.
Stacy?
No.
Which one?
You have chosen not to name her in previous episodes.
Oh, Cedar City.
Yeah, Cedar City.
Oh, I was such a terrible, terrible kid. I was awful.
But it was just those moments like that. And I mean, I don't know. I always looked up to you, which was weird because you were younger than me.
But taller.
And because you were getting it and I had no clue.
Well, I was shameless. That's really what it came down to.
It was that, and it was just that you grasp onto that, what you were talking about with Tammy. You grasped onto the one of the secrets about handling teenage girls or young women. Older women don't usually fall for that shit, but the younger women do.
Yeah.
And I remember a friend of mine, very similar in personality, was telling me about, he went over to this girl's house and for her birthday party, and she was a twin. And so it was a big deal that they were having this big birthday party, these twin sisters having this birthday party. And all these suitors had come over because her family was a rich family. And they were chasing around the two twins and, you know, and doing all these things for them. And he was having a water fight with kids at the party and then took a nap on the deck chair, you know, just didn't do anything that the suitors were doing. And sure enough, that night she was at his place watching movies and then having sex with him. And I thought, that's it. That's the deal. That's the secret. You make yourself this mysterious individual. But me, I was always the dumb suitor chasing the girls around.
Look, I just to throw this out there, with Tammy, it was dumb luck.
Yeah.
And in a lot of cases at that age, my, if we can call them successes, which a 42-year-old Jeff finds the behavior and thought patterns of 18-year-old Jeff very, very uncomfortable.
Yes.
No matter how nostalgic I get. But there was one time when we were in the theater department, and I believe this girl's name was Natalie. And she was kind of new. She didn't really know who anybody was. And to put this all in perspective, this was when I was living in the College Scene Shop. I was wearing that pair of cutoff sweatpants that I wore for about 8 months, sleeping in a coffin. My hair was long because I couldn't afford a haircut.
Before or after you moved in with me? It was after, right?
It was after. Your mom, look, your mom, without a doubt, is a saint. And if she were Catholic, should be canonized. But your mom was pretty sick of having me around. And so I went to live in the scene shop.
Having me around, so one of us had to go.
But this girl, I just was like, I had a thing for her. And she wouldn't give me the time of day.
Mm-hmm.
And one day, I was out sitting on the back of Jeff Schultz's car. It was snowing just lightly. And there I am. I'm in Converse All-Stars and cut-off shorts and a coat.
Smoking a cigarette.
Yeah. And she walked by and said hello or whatever to me. And I said, you know, I realized that whatever part of your brain runs your day-to-day thinks you have no interest in me. But deep down inside, you not only want to spend time with me, you want to spend the rest of your life with me. And she says, what? And I said, you want to marry me, but you just can't admit it to yourself. And she laughed a little. And what followed was a 20-minute debate in which I laid out and signposted quite succinctly why I was a good catch, why she should just, you know, tell the voices telling her no to be quiet. Now, Mike Robinson was sitting with me on the back of Jeff Schultz's car. And I'm not going to say that this worked, but I managed to approach her in such a left field way that she was thinking about my words. You know, 20 years ago, I would have said, oh, I had her hooked. But now I'm just like, all I did was hit her in such an oddball direction that she was giving it deep thought.
Not to say you talked faster than they could think,
which I could do pretty easy in Utah County. And there was something, there was a bit of that idiot magic working that my screwed up thought processes had broken through a barrier that wasn't expecting to get hit. As I finally am talking her into going and getting a cup of coffee, Mike Robinson snapped his fingers, cock blocker, and said, you know, Natalie, he has the attention span of a house fly. At which point, her head almost whiplash, snap, and she's like, oh, my God, and she stomped off. But we were pals after that. She was just, you know, and it was, I mean, I pulled stunts like that off a lot. And I never thought about what the hell I was doing. Now, that led to me being an insensitive jerk off all the time, never on purpose. I never went out with, oh, I'm going to fuck that girl over. It was just more like I'd do something stupid or see something stupid or opportunistic. And I would go, ooh, because I, it turns out, did have the attention span of a housefly. Did you just get past a note? You just got past a note.
Kind of. My kid came in to ask me if I wanted to watch The Amazing Spiro-on-Head with him, which I'm like, no, you can watch it. You can watch it by yourself.
All right.
I'll watch it later. It's Mike Mignola.
Is that Angus?
Yep, that was Angus.
Did you get my note on Facebook about him today?
Yeah.
What a little shit.
He's popular.
He's a handsome, smart, fun-to-be-around little bugger, and I think he should be our mascot.
He got busted yesterday, or the day before.
Busted?
Yeah, he was up on the roof of the school with his buddies. and one of the girls they were with decided to hop down in front of windows.
Oh. I didn't know he went to school in Utah County.
Yeah. Oh, it's still just Utah in general, I think, the dipshittery abounds. So they all got busted, and I thought it was a, to me, I'm like, this is a little extreme for a punishment. They were threatening him with immediate suspension. And one of the girls said, well, I'm already in trouble. You can't suspend me. And so she talked. They weren't in the principal's office. They were in the artistic director's office because this is a art school.
You can't get me in trouble. I'm already in trouble.
And I know the artistic director, and she's a bit of a soft touch. So she said, that's fine, but you all have to do 2 hours of community service. And I think back to all the dipshit things I did in junior high and high school, and all the times I was in trouble. I never got suspended. I never got anything more than yelled at. So I'm like, that just seemed a little extreme.
Yeah, that seems pretty soft to me.
If I'd ever been caught doing the things that were really bad, I would have been expelled.
Yeah.
But I never got caught because I had smart friends.
You know, it's one of the problems I have... as I was watching my son grow up,
mm-hmm.
and that he did a lot of the things that I did when I was his age, dumb things.
Yeah.
But there was a difference both in, you know, cause I can't lay this down to, you know, I'm any smarter than him. Cause I don't think I am, but I mean, one, we had more of a hands-off approach, and it was like, if you did something stupid, yeah, you might get suspended. And I got suspended for fighting a few times. That's frowned upon, especially when we're coming into football season and Jeff's beating up football players.
I understood fighting being a suspendable thing because sure. You probably need a couple of days to cool off rather than seeing each other in the hall, or you're just going to keep punching at each other.
I didn't need any days.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, but it's, you know, it's, you know, when I did some drugs and I drank some and didn't go to school, and I didn't get caught, and the very few times I did get caught, I was able to explain and logic and wiggle my way out of. And with him, he'd get caught and just be like, "Well, fuck it." And that was always very frustrating to me. Is it's like, I understand the temptation to do dumb things. My memoirs that will someday be written will be probably called "Look at all these dumb things I did," but you know, it was frustrating to me to watch him work in a system that had so beaten him down that he showed no imagination in not getting caught.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he would just do. There was no planning. There was no forethought. There was no afterthought. It was just do, get caught, suck it up until you can get out of the house again and do it again. And that was very frustrating. I like the you have to go out and do something good for your community. I don't understand why they'd have to do that for being on the roof. I mean, if they put a car on the roof, sure, 2 hours of community service. Or
get
livestock.
The first, but yeah, I don't know. They were just up there, you know, hunting down old balls or something that had been thrown up on the roof and probably finding places to make out or something. I don't know.
They're in that transitional phase. Balls.
Yeah.
Making balls. Out. So what did you, going through high school and coming out of high school into college, because you graduated a couple of years before I did.
Yeah, and it was the sheer luck of when you were born and the fact that we were in a 3-year high school instead of a 4-year high school. But even if we'd been in a 4-year high school, I wouldn't have met you just because of you were born right on that cusp when they wouldn't have let you go to kindergarten.
Yeah, they bumped me a year, made me wait a year, which made me bigger and smarter than the rest of the kids.
Mm-hmm.
So... yeah, by the time I got into kindergarten, I'd seen some life, man. I'd seen it.
So
that was it. I was the first kid in my grade to drive. I was the first kid in my grade to have the puberty. I was the first by like 3 years, which was always very strange in gym class.
Mm-hmm.
And I did grow up fast and early. I mean, Christ, I had my Letterman's jacket before I even was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Which, by the way, always pissed off the football players, which I think is where all that animosity came from. because I'm a ninth grader bopping around in a high school Letterman's jacket. Where'd you get that, dummy? I earned it. Swimming
Water polo, swimming
state, won a medal. What? So that's all. They had rules. No ninth grader had ever in Pleasant Grove had ever had a Letterman's jacket before, and I wanted one, so I did all the things I had to do to get it. I won a bunch of races. I went through my 200 hours of practice, and the coach is like, "You're not in high school." I'm like, "Here is your rules, sir. Give me permission."
Well,
so,
no matter what, ninth grade counted, so you're always in high school, as far as I was concerned.
I like ninth grade being in junior high, though. I hope it's that way for my kids. 4-year high school seems kind of...
Well, Angus is at a 4-year high school, and
But he's not at a normal high school. Is it a good high school?
Well, he spends half his day... He spends a quarter of his day at the good high school, and then the rest of it at Highland High School, which is...
Highland's okay.
Stupidity, so, in my opinion.
Well, you know, my mom went to Highland, so she thinks it's the best high school ever, but that was like 120 years ago.
Exactly.
Yes, I called your grandmother 140 years old. Don't bust my chops. So, grandma is a vampire, and she will outlive us all.
That is truth.
Yeah. No, seriously, man, my mom is like 70 and she looks like she's in her late 50s. And my dad is 80 and he looks like he's in his late 50s. It's just obscene. And yes, I got carded buying beer the other day, but I'm pretty sure that was just a new person.
I was going to say,
yeah.
Great genes. It's a shame you're adopted.
Yeah, nah, no doubt. So you're going through, let's go through, you know, from high school into college. I hit Pleasant Grove High School the year after you left. And you and I are peripherally tooling around together until halfway through my junior year when I just was like, screw high school, and started going to college. Which I was always very proud of, but it turns out any of these idiot kids can do it if they just take the right tests.
I think we started hanging out just a little bit before that.
Oh, yeah.
Even the summer before you became a junior, because we had done that Snow White and the Seven Dwarves play together.
That was the one where I blew up, what's her name, Sarah Ash.
Yep.
Oh, she was one that got away.
And I apparently came out of the closet backstage.
Did you?
You know, I was acting all fruity, and I don't know why. It was just funny to me.
Your hair was starting to grow. This was back when you and I, that was the summer that you and I had our hair growing contest. Mm-hmm.
But for me, it was to a mullet. It didn't count.
True, but, I mean, we did, and it may have been once we were in college together, but we both decided to see who could grow their bangs out the longest.
Yep, I did that.
Which turned us both into really odd... wannabes of like Bono's haircut for a while.
Bono and what's his name? River Phoenix.
Yeah.
The River Phoenix look.
Yeah, because we got pictures of that on the Facebook of you and Jake and Tina and I all hiking up to Timpanogos.
That's the whole reason I have Facebook, is because Tina put those pictures up.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Tina doesn't talk to me on Facebook anymore. I don't think she likes my politics or my potty mouth. But she still invites me to parties. Mm-hmm. I'd love her.
Yep, she's
so
awesome.
As you look back, let's go from you finishing up high school through leaving Utah Valley Communist Collective and heading to the U when you met your wife. But what in those years, was there any definitive female encounter that left you either elated or scarred that still sticks out that you'd be willing to talk about?
There were two.
I think I know one of them.
First, we had the goddess Tashira.
Yeah.
In my wildest imagination, I never would have thought she would have gone for some weird little hipster like me at the time. And
but you were
that
a hipster
during
before
the long
it was
bang
a thing.
Phase and everything.
Yeah.
And we were doing a play together. Actually, she wasn't doing the play, she had been brought in as an understudy for one of the girls because she had to take a couple of nights off. And so Tashera wound up filling in and working with us pretty much through the end of the run, I think. And we just had a great time. And this was a fun group because we were all college age students when we did this show. And it was just a lot of fun doing it. It was an original play. It was stupid in every sense of the word. But it was a lot of fun to do. And I had a lot of fun doing it. And all of a sudden, just out of the blue, she starts wanting to come over and wanting to hang out. So I asked her out a couple of times. And yeah.
Back when that was a thing. Now it's all,
that was a thing.
You want to hang?
I don't know. I mean, she was the greatest boost to my ego I think I've ever had. Walking around with holding hands with her or her on my arm. In the college and that. And we only lasted a month before she dumped me for a guy named after a water sport. Wade. And
better than Chip.
Much better than Chip. He should have been named Chip. And then her mom, of course, was kind of busting her chops.
Oh, geez, Shira, I don't know about this one. This one seems pretty bad, Shira.
Yeah,
he's pretty bad.
I was a heathen, and admittingly so. Certainly not somebody following the ways of the Mormon Jesus Christ or anything like that. But then,
or any of them, really.
Then I got
you were Buddhist then. You were doing the Buddha thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just starting to, and I got hung up on her, unfortunately, because she was such a boost to my ego. And I chased her probably for the better part of a year. After that 1 month of bliss, I just wanted it back, you know? And I actually went to fucking church with her and everything, and really felt like I don't know, I look back on it, it was like the most dirty I've ever been, you know? I'm like, I might as well have been a prostitute for all I was doing. And it was all over a girl, just because I got hung up on her. And strung out on her.
Nothing. Just sorry. It's, you know.
Yeah.
J.C. Carter, male gigolo.
So it was almost a wasted effort.
Yeah.
But that was me. I mean, I would get hung up on them because that was my ego boost. That was what made me feel like I wasn't all the things that the bullies had told me I was going to be growing up. All the things my mother had said to me were not true when I was with Pretty Girl. And
I'm sorry, I got you back in the closet.
Yeah. No, it's true. And I mean, this is shit I've worked through, so
yeah.
It is what it is. But I mean, at the time it was like I have full books of bad poetry that I wrote over all these girls. I've got reams and reams of paper over Tashera alone.
I have read them.
Yeah. And they're terrible.
They're not all terrible.
And I keep them because I want to be reminded that I don't need to be in dipshit about this kind of stuff in my life. And every time I start feeling a little low in myself, I pull out that big, thick green binder of mine and start flipping through the poems. And by the end, I feel great about myself again.
I think it should be noted for the historical record that the writing in that green binder is probably 90% dot matrix printer.
Yes.
From various computer labs at shitty community colleges.
Yes.
Because I remember you and I had Larry, what was his name?
Larry Harper.
For creative writing. And I made the mistake of taking a swing at poetry in day one. Mm-hmm. And while everybody else was working on story composition, Larry punished me by making me do nothing but poetry for the entire semester.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have hated poetry ever since. You know, before it was just to me something to mock a little bit, but that I just hate it. I hate it.
And I really wanted to do it. I found that it was something I enjoyed doing, and I'd share it with other girls and they'd be aww and everything, but then they wouldn't go out with me.
Like, well,
I wonder why now that I think back on it.
Well, keep in mind, sir, as you wrote a shit ton of poetry, that I, chasing a girl that did not belong to me,
mm-hmm.
in the non-misogynist sense of the term, that was involved with another man. I wrote her a novel that ended in my kidnapping her, and because it was, I mean, it was blatantly autobiographical, and scared the shit out of her until she asked me to leave town.
Yes.
Could you just leave town? I said, you know, I think you're right. I think that I have gone a little too far with this. I can't leave town, but I'll leave you alone. Mm-hmm. And of course, a few years later, we ended up engaged, but...
Yeah. I'm so sorry. But yeah, I don't know. It was just all that. He really... And the thing about Larry was is that he didn't really understand poetry, which I loved, because I could write anything bad, and he praised it. And nobody in class seemed to have any clue. So then I go up to the U, and one of the first classes I take is poetry. And I didn't realize what it meant that the poet laureate or a former poet laureate was a professor there. I didn't get him, but I got one of his students.
Even worse. And
she shredded me from day one to the end. And I wrote some stuff that I look back on. I'm like, that was really fucking good. And yet at the time, I mean, and yet she just shredded everything I did. There was just nothing, and all of us felt that way. Everybody who stuck through the class all the way through the quarter felt like there was one person that she liked one poem of where she praised it. Everybody else just got shredded constantly. And I'm like, if that's poetry, I don't want to be involved with it. So I gave
up.
Well,
the part of poetry that you never really got was a serious hatred for humanity.
Yeah.
You know, don't get me wrong. I know you dislike humanity, you know, but it's
I am mildly misanthropic.
Oh, but, sure.
Yeah.
But I mean, I compare it to, and maybe this is unfair to the world, but I spent 3.5, almost 4 years working for Rocky Anderson.
Yeah.
Rocky Anderson, who is a champion of human rights for the environment, for the betterment of people in society. And yet the guy hates everybody, treats everybody like a fucking moron, and you know, had over 100 people quit working for him.
Yeah.
And you know, still thinks it's everybody else. And that's how I always felt about people that you know, when you were doing poetry, you were not this way, but other people that were doing poems pretty constantly were. And that was just like, I am set apart from you, and you are nothing more than something that should bask in the radiance of my poems. And you did say poems for a while, but no, you were still a nice dude. So of course it wouldn't have worked out.
It was never going to work out for me.
We should have been writing comic books. Now that I'm looking back to 20 years ago,
I should have learned. I've learned now how to script them, but I have a hard time keeping a story idea together for more than a couple of pages. The thing I'm working on right now for the Salt City Strangers is interesting because I can see every page, but it's only 8 pages. I don't have to come up with 32 or 22 pages, so I'm pretty happy with that. But yeah, I should have focused more time on comic books and comic book scripts because I had great ideas for characters and stuff.
But we were still underclass then. We were still third class citizens.
Yeah.
You know, if you'd thrown a Comic-Con back then, it would have been me and you and about 10 of our friends.
And it pretty much was anytime a sci-fi convention came to town.
Yeah.
You'd take one of the little ballrooms at I think we were at the Red Lion, and it was just one of the smaller ballrooms, I swear. And that was a Star Trek convention with Jimmy Doohan as the special guest. And we probably, I don't think we got more than 100 people there. And you look at Comic-Con now, and it's like, what happened in all these years? And
yeah.
I couldn't tell you, apart from geek culture has become popular. Thank you, Sheldon.
True. Well, no, it was before that.
It was before that.
I mean, San Diego's been pulling in 100,000 for more than a decade.
And San Diego started pulling in the big numbers when they started inviting the movie people out. And probably their worst mistake was bringing out the Twilight cast. Because now, for the first time, the geeks had to share an area with all these giggling little fangirls that wouldn't understand literature if it hit them in the head.
No, but the fuckers buy concessions.
Yep, and they buy concessions, and they buy tickets, and all of a sudden it became a thing.
Yeah. So do you want to...
Everybody looked at... I think they were looking at it like, well, it's just a fantasy movie, you know? Vampires and stuff. That's stuff that's in comics. Let's bring it out. And they did, and it... Yeah. I still remember all the blowback from that that came over the internet.
No, I get it. I get it. So do you want to tell the second woman, or do you want to save that for a future episode?
Oh, well, the second one was your fault.
Wait,
no. I blame you.
Which one was it?
She was a married lady.
How is that my fault? I wasn't even in town.
You were in town.
I was in town. It was right before I left.
At the time, you were on your way out. And she was 8 years older than me, which seemed... She seemed so old. Now if I met a 32-year-old woman, she'd seem like a kid to me.
No shit.
But back then, that was like,
hey, for what it's worth, she seemed old. There was an anger, a certain leathered personality quality to we're not going to say her name then.
No, I don't think that's fair.
Let's call her Muffy.
Muffy
so,
is fine.
Yeah. So yeah, I remember when I met her, I was just like, huh, she makes no sense.
Muffy was abused by her husband that she'd been with for, I think, 11 years at the time. She'd been abused before that in her life. So it was always a cycle of abuse. She was always the victim in this kind of stuff. And she latched onto me, the whiny poet, art guy at the college, because I was pretty much the exact opposite of her husband. And as far as I could tell, that I'm like, I have no clue. I mean, apart from the fact, I get that he beats you and you want to leave him for that reason, but you could do better than me. And sure. She didn't want to. But she let me know, and I always love women who do this, she let me know in no uncertain terms, I am yours if you want.
That's polite.
It's very polite, and it cuts down on a lot of time and a lot of second guessing, because I fucking hate that. I hate getting shot down. It's why, you know, girls are always like, men, why don't men go after me? Why don't men? Because you don't give them a clue that you'd be at all interested in them.
Right.
And she just flat out said, I am yours if you want me. And I was like, you're married. And you're old. I don't know.
I still am not airing the part where this is my fucking fault.
So she would pick us up, you and me, from the college, and drive us around, and then drive us back to my place, where she would want to make out with me in the front seat while you played Mario Brothers in the back seat.
Oops.
On their, because they had a little TV monitor up. This was a minivan. Long before we could, you know, have little flat screens or anything, there was a little TV monitor up there with a Nintendo hooked up. And we got out of the van one day, and I'm just like, Jeff, I don't know what the fuck to do, because this woman is not letting up, and I just don't know, man. She's married, and this is a huge deal. And her husband's really fucking scary.
Yeah.
And you looked at me and you said, well, John, if there's one thing I can tell you, it's grandkids love married woman stories.
Oh, God.
Yep.
Oh, shit. I'm so sorry.
Just sealed the deal right there.
And you know what? I have to admit, I don't recall this for sure, but it may have been that I wanted to finish playing Super Mario Brothers too.
I think that's entirely possible. So I said, all right, let's do this. So we started, you know, I started going out of my way to be with her and meet up with her. Her husband caught us one day in the back of their van, in the back of her van.
If the vans are rocking,
yeah,
you have grounds for divorce.
Yeah, and he came in, and she had fellated me, and we were there, I'm basking in the afterglow, trying to figure out what the hell to do next, because I'm like, nothing else is going to happen for me. Do I give her a hand job? I don't know. And then all of a sudden, his head comes in the van door, and I about shit my pants. And I'm there. My pants are still undone. And I thought, you know what? Let's try this. I'll probably get killed, but let's try this. I went full pacifist. And I didn't get in his face. I just said, you can do whatever you want. I won't fight back. And he just got blustery and left.
Well played, sir.
And I'm like, wow, that was weird. I should be dead. And I asked her if she was going to be okay. She said, yeah, he won't hurt me. It's my daughter's birthday. She went home. He put a bruise on her head that if he'd gone 2 inches further up her skull, he would have killed her because he would have smacked her in the temple.
Oh.
The bruise on her forehead, the knot on her forehead stuck out like 3 or 4 inches. And from there, she just immediately called the cops, took the kids. They put her in a safe house, all this kind of stuff. One of those abused wives' houses. And we went from there. And then he moved out. And then it was effectively expected that I was going to move in, which I was, you know me, I was not in any emotional state at that time to do anything like that. I mean, you were already taken off to...
I was already in Denver.
Yeah, you were already in Denver, and I don't have a job. You know, I'm thinking about all these things logically. I'm like, I couldn't move in with you, but I don't, because it's not a moral issue, and it's not like I need to live with mom or anything like that, but I'm living with mom because I don't have a job. I'm a full-time student. I'm having a great fucking time as a full-time student. And apart from her nagging me to get a job over the summer, as long as I'm in school, she's good with that.
Yeah.
So why give up a great thing just because you want me living with you? But I spent as much time as I could over there. Anytime she had PMS, she broke up with me 8 times. I would usually know about at least 3 to 4 of them. She was just... she was just the most psychotic person I think I had ever met in my life.
Yeah.
She was eventually sectioned by her ex-husband because he came over, told her something, admitted something that she had always known, and she flipped out and went to town on him with her fingernails, ripping his face up a little bit here and there.
Eek.
And he called the cops, and she wouldn't settle down, and so they hauled her off and put her in, I don't remember the name of it, the one in Sandy, the mental institution. And so then I was driving up every fucking night to visit her in the mental institution. When she finally got released, because she was literally serving a sentence for what she did, when she finally got released, we spent one night together before she was going off to California to stay with an aunt. And she would write me and call me. And then came into town one day. We had a great little time while she was in town. She was probably the most sane I'd ever seen her, but I couldn't trust her anymore.
Oh, yeah.
And so she loved to play little games, you know, test me, as it were. And just before I went up to the U full time, she called me up from California and said, yeah, I don't think we should be together anymore. You're going to go to the U full time, and I really need to, you know, try to figure out what I'm going to do, and I need to try to get my kids back. And what she wanted me to say was, no, I love you. We need to be together. We need to stay together. This is insane. We can make it work, blah, blah, blah. Come live with me up at the U, something like that, right? I said, yeah, you're probably right. And the conversation kind of went downhill after that, with a lot of tears on her part and me just calmly telling her why I no longer wanted to be with her and no longer wanted to be around her anymore. And that was it. But during those 11 months that we were together, this poor, stupid Mormon kid from Mormon Pleasant Grove, where Everybody was getting laid because Pleasant Grove, PG, had a true nickname of Pregnant Girl.
Yeah.
But I had no clue how that was supposed to happen because every girl acted like a virgin and, you know, curled their lips up in revulsion anytime somebody even mentioned something sexual. She taught me everything I needed to know about sex. And then stuff I probably didn't need to know about sex.
Yeah.
And it was great. It was great. There was a writing group you and I were involved in a number of years ago, and there was this older guy who wrote about a dude leaving Mormonism. It was kind of semi-autobiographical. And he wrote this scene about a woman who let him tie her up and then have his way with her. And we never got around to the actual bondage, but that was effectively that level of understanding sexuality that I received from what were we calling her?
Muffy.
Muffy, yeah. That was sort of the sexual understanding I received from Muffy. And so I was pretty pretty happy about that part of it. So I have you to thank for my sexual education. In as much as,
you know, that's the clip I'm pulling out. You get your AFC award, that's the clip I'm pulling out.
That would be a great clip to have too. But
I thank you for my sexual education.
But it is still his fault that I dated her because she was still a psychopath.
Yeah. Dude, look,
you got to take the good with the bad, I think. And that was it, you know. I mean,
the crazy ones are a rite of passage.
They are.
And I believe that, now look, we're all crazy to some extent or another. I at no point claim to have ever been either a good boyfriend or even a good husband. Mm-hmm. The best I can come up with is that I've cheated on one girl in my life. And while I still to this day regret that I did it, mm-hmm. I don't regret who I did it with. But I really don't. I still am fond of both of them, mm-hmm. you know. But if it weren't for the crazies, if it weren't for the hard to work ones, if it weren't for the ones that were unpredictable and, let's face it, quite psychotic, you know, I couldn't have been married 12 years. You know, it's no matter how bad things get, it's been both, you know, worse and more dangerous. And so
I have a fight with my wife, and the first thought in the back of my mind, you know, the little Jiminy Cricket in the back of my mind said, hey, at least she's not coming at you with a knife.
Yeah. I've had the same thought. Okay. You know what? I want to wrap there.
Yeah.
The next time you and I do this, which will probably be in a couple of months, because I have no problem with repeats, I do want to swap some theater stories, because you and I, that's really, it's not how we met per se, but I met you through theater people. We bonded through theater. Mm-hmm. I was telling funny stories about the joke performance or the prank performance at Oklahoma to Bob this weekend, and how we just destroyed Mike Robinson that night. So I do want to talk about that. But in the meantime, thanks for filling in tonight. I really didn't feel like reading a chapter of anything I'd written yet. coming up on the show, as it were. Well, let me do this really quick. And I know it's tight, but you have you've got Grace this last weekend for people that are listening to this the day it drops. That's tomorrow, Friday, and Saturday. Are you doing Sunday again?
Nope, no Sunday. Just Friday and Saturday.
And that's
it. Saturday, we got a matinee and a regular performance.
What time?
Our discounts are done, so you missed out on those. But don't be that guy. Come see the play.
Yeah, tell them the play is Grace. It's a wonderful story about different lifestyles colliding. Mm-hmm. It's got a great cast. The reviews I've read are really good. It's at the Sugar Space in Sugar House, downtown Salt Lake, Utah, at 616. Say it again.
616 Wilmington Avenue.
I almost had it.
Yeah.
And
Bob,
you can
get out of it because it's 616.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
Yeah, I like that.
And I think there's a little bit more information, but you can't buy tickets, but there's a little more information at utahrep.org.
Yes, utahrep.org has more information, and you can buy your tickets there.
Oh, okay.
Through Vendini online. Pick them up now. Just buy them now. It gives me a happy when I see the tickets come through and I see your name on them.
Sure.
So buy your, especially if I know you, Misty, Jason.
For those of you that, for some reason, listen to this show and not the other ones, JC is with me quite often on The Left Show at theleftshow.com, drops every Monday. And he is the host of the world's greatest comic book podcast, Hold 322 at hold322.com. He's been one of my best friends for longer than I'd care to admit. Hang on a sec. Let's do the math. 24, 25, 26 years?
26 years.
26 years. Fuck. That's a really long time.
That is a long time.
We look pretty good.
We're not too bad for being fat guys.
All right, buddy. Thank you. Good night. Yep. Tell your wife thank you for letting me have you for some time.
She was sleepy, so it worked out.
Outstanding.
I still got a paper to write, so.
And I have to go to the pharmacy, so we both have stuff to do.
All right.
All right. Thank you.
Good night.
In the melting snows of Ontario, where the wind will make you shiver. Was the month of May up in Georgian Bay near the mouth of the Musquash River, where the bears prowl and the coyotes howl and you can hear the osprey scream. Back in 99 we were cutting pine and sending it down the stream. Young Sandy Gray came to Guhom Bay all the way from PEI. Weather's rough and it makes it tough. No man's afraid to die. Sandy came a smiling. 30,000 islands was the place to claim his glory. Now Sandy's gone, but his name lives on. This is Sandy's story. Young Sandy Gray lives on today in the echoes of a mighty owl. Listen close and you'll hear a ghost in this story that I tell, boys, this story that I tell. Now Sandy Gray was boss of the men who would toss the trees onto the shore. They'd come and go till they built a floe 100,000 logs or more. And he'd ride them down towards Severn Sound to cut them up in the mills for timber. And the ships would haul spring, summer, and fall till the ice came in December. One Sabbath day, Big Sandy Gray came into camp with a peavey on his shoulder. With a thunder crack, he dropped his axe and the room got a little bit colder. Said, come on all you, we got work to do. We gotta give her all we can give her. There's a jam of logs at the little jog near the mouth of the Musquash River. With no time to pray on the Lord's Day, they were hoping for God's forgiveness. But the jam was high in a troubled sky, and they set out about their business. They poked with their poles and ran with the rolls and tried to stay on their feet. Every trick they tried, one man cried, this log jam's got us beat. But Sandy Gray was not afraid and he let out a mighty yell. I'll be damned, we'll break this jam or it's breakfast in hell, boys. Breakfast in hell. Did the work of 10 and Sandy scrambled up to the top. He's working like a dog, even 30-foot logs, and it looked like he'd never stop. And he struggled on, these men so strong, till the jam began to sway. And the Dofer cover to the banks of the river, all except for Sandy Gray. Now with thoughts of death, they held their breath as they saw their friend go down. They all knew in a second or two he'd be crushed or frozen or drowned. Yeah, they saw him fall, they heard him call just once, then it was over. Young Sandy Gray gave his life that day through the mouth of the Musquash River. But Sandy Gray was not afraid and he let out a mighty yell. I'll be damned, we'll break this jam, or it's breakfast in hell, boys. Breakfast in hell. East of Giant's Tomb, there's plenty of room, there's no fences and no walls. And if you listen close, you'll hear a ghost down by Sandy Gray Falls. Through the tops of the trees, you'll hear in the breeze the echoes of a mighty yell. I'll be damned, we'll break this jam, or it's breakfast in hell. And Sandy Gray lives on today in the echoes of a mighty yell. I'll be damned, we'll break this jam, or it's breakfast in hell, boys. Breakfast in hell.